Welcome, everybody. My name is Greg, and this is the first episode of the podcast, My First Season. In this podcast, I'll be interviewing people who worked in holiday or ski resorts, hotel and cruise ships, and we'll talk about their first season in the hospitality and tourism industry. My first guest needs no introduction, but I'm going to introduce him anyway. Ladies and gentlemen, Mr. James Joker Cradle. What's up? How are you?
How's it going, brother?
Pretty good. Thanks again for agreeing to do this. I really appreciate it.
My pleasure.
Since you are the first guest on the first podcast of my first season, so I really do thank you. And I don't have any money, so I did not pay James. Man, it's so weird calling you James after 21 years. Can I call you Joker?
Of course.
Okay, thank you. So thanks again. All right, so we probably spoke about this 21 years ago. Spoiler alert, Joker and I did work together in Australia. But I never, if I did ask him about his first season, I don't remember it. It was too long ago, or maybe I didn't ask him at all because I was probably a selfish prick back then. I don't know. But so where were you? Like, where are you from and what were you doing before you decided to apply to Club Med?
I am originally from Boston. Well, just outside of Boston, Massachusetts, a town called Newton. And that's actually where I was before I started with Club Med. At the time I was working two different jobs. I was working for UPS.
Really?
I was working for UPS and I was doing just a graveyard shift. I believe it was from midnight to 8 in the morning. And so that was getting packages off of the semi trucks and sorting them into their different bins so that they could be distributed in the morning. And then I had my second job, which was working at a research firm, and I was doing data analysis and data coding for them.
Okay, so did you get a lot of nice package jokes when you're working at UPS?
No, it's like a union job, man. There was no one there that was, you know, really in like the best of mood at any particular time. It was a bunch of older guys. I think I definitely was the youngest person working there. A bunch of them had been there for years and years, guys that were trying to actually kind of work their way up to having their own truck so that they could do deliveries, because that was, I guess, where the money was.
Okay, so in doing those two jobs then, how the heck did you find about Club Med? Like, who told you? Did you have a friend? How did you find out about it?
Yeah, exactly. So before I had gone to college, right out of high school, I went to prep school. And in the prep school that I went to, it was mostly for sports. So generally everyone, well, most of the older people, the older students that went there were there for football, basketball, soccer, wrestling, whatever. I was actually a soccer player at the time. And so we were all trying to get scholarships to different universities or whatever like that, sports scholarships. So a very, very good friend of mine was an All-American wrestler. And he had an elective at the school, and he got his certification to be a dive instructor. So that's how he got started. So his name was Charlie, a really good buddy of mine. And what happened with him is actually out of prep school, he was All-American wrestler, incredible wrestler, but his grades weren't really there. And the problem is all the schools that he applied to, his academics didn't allow him to get in. So all these coaches wanted him, but he actually didn't get into the schools he applied to because of his academics. So instead of going to college, Charlie decided to go to Club Med. So,
as a dive instructor?
Exactly. Yeah. So okay. he was a scuba diving instructor. So for years after, you know, I went to university, a college down in Atlanta, Georgia. You know, I'd get messages from him every once in a while. They would say, you know, it'd be, oh God, I'm having the most amazing time ever. You got to come and see me. I'm in Barcelona, or, you know, just rant, you know, these crazy messages. And I'm like, yeah, dude, there's no way. So that went on for a couple of years. And then he would kind of just show up, you know, when he finally got his vacations with Club Med, he'd show up and just be in Boston, you know, not tell me he was coming, not tell me, no warning, just show up and hang out in Boston for 2 weeks and then be off again. And so one summer in 97, he had said, listen, I don't know what you got going on right now, but I got a spot for you right now. If you want to come down, you pay for your flight ticket down, and the rest is taken care of. So that's basically how it started.
Wait a minute. Are you saying you got in without an interview?
Yeah.
And wait a minute. Were you considered au pair because he said you had to pay your way down?
Exactly. I was an au pair. So I started as an au pair.
Holy gee, you were an au pair. Okay. So did you ask what the job entailed?
I did not. He just, okay. Yeah, nobody. I mean, listen, so, I mean, I was, you know, I was in Boston and, you know, it's just kind of one of those things where I, you know, I felt kind of, I was like spinning my wheels, doing the same thing over and over again. And,
what month was this? Was this winter, summer, spring?
Or August.
August. Okay. So fall's coming up. All right.
Yeah. So, it happened to be that where he was working at the time was, Cancun, Mexico.
Was he still a scuba instructor?
Still a scuba instructor. So this is 1997.
Was he tight with the manager? Like how, I'm trying to think, like, I don't call anyone getting a job without the interview, even though it was au pair. And I guess he vouched for you with the manager or.
Yeah.
Because I think I'm remembering correctly your first job, but I'd like you to say it, please.
Yeah. So I came down, I had no idea what I was going to be doing. And this is, bear in mind that I had never left the United States of America before. Like I had never been to Canada. I had never been on a vacation with my family outside of the States. So,
okay.
You know, me flying to Mexico is just surreal. And so I got down there and on arrival, I learned that my job was going to be Village.
No. Oh, God.
The job's so nice, they named it twice.
Yeah, that, actually, was one of my questions. Well, I don't have to ask that now. Okay. So explain for those maybe newer people or new to the hotel and tourism industry what that is, because as Club Med evolved, they stopped doing that, but tell people what that actually entailed.
Okay. So, I mean, I guess to start the explanation, I was there as an au pair, which meant that I would work X amount of hours a day, but I would never, I wasn't going to be paid for it. But I never really had to work a full day. I had one day off a week, which at the time, I don't even think,
no, they weren't doing that yet. No.
Yeah. They didn't really have days off, but the au pairs had one day off a week. We weren't paid and we worked X amount of hours. So
wait. Did we mention where you got sent?
Yeah, I was in Cancun.
Cancun. Okay. Cancun, yeah. Mexico. All right. Sorry.
Which was, you know, incredible because it was, you know, singles village, you know, fun and sun, the whole kit. Village, what that was is basically like a, you know, a greeting geo. And so what that meant was that when people came in that weren't on the charters, my responsibility would be to take care of those people, you know, get them checked in and then to give them a quick tour of the village and bring them to their rooms.
Yeah. So you basically had to plant yourself at reception for like how many hours was your shift?
I'm going to be perfectly honest. I don't even remember. It was maybe 5 or 6 hours.
Yeah. Yeah. That's
something like that. Right? Or, you know, at most. Okay. You know?
So over the years, like when he'd pop up unannounced, so did he like tell you what he was doing and did you not understand? Cause me, I didn't understand from the guy that told me about it, like sounded fun, but I had no idea what he was talking about.
Well, yeah. I mean, yeah. So, I mean, there's no real way to articulate exactly what you do as a GO because it's just all encompassing. Your entire life becomes working at that point in one way or another. I think as far as he explained it is that, you know, he's a scuba instructor during the day, and then in the evening he did some shows, but there was much more explanation than that, you know, just that he lived there, he was paid, they, you know, you got to eat with, you know, he gave me kind of like the gist, you know, you ate with the guests, which even that was very odd, you know, you're eating with the guests, he got paid, he worked the day as a scuba instructor, and in the evening he did stuff with the guests and did shows and whatnot.
Yeah, I just, sorry to cut you off, but I want to know, like, so knowing that, okay, so he mentioned to you about the guests, like, I know you now as an extrovert, but were you anxious about having to have like 3 meals a day, talk 24/7 with the guests, or were you shy, or?
Yeah, no, yeah, I was absolutely a bit out of my comfort zone, you know, I mean, you got, bearing in mind, like I said before, I'd never even left the state, so to be sitting at a table with people from all over the place and coming in contact with people that spoke all these different languages and me being the classic American that could literally speak English and my high school, college Spanish, which was garbage. Okay. And the fact that, you know, I went there looking like I was straight from Boston. So, I mean, this is, you know, it's 90 degrees out in August in Mexico and I'm wearing Timberland boots and like jean shorts, you know what I mean? So,
classic.
Yeah, that's really how it was going down.
Okay, so you told me, being au pair, so you had a day off. So, but other than that, like, I assume you had a normal, like, 16-hour, like, did they try to throw you in shows right away?
Or no, they didn't really put me in any shows in the beginning. I was, I did, like, the crazy signs, so I need to be around and be present. So, you have to be in the area. You have to, mingle with the guests and whatnot. And so, we had to be present. We couldn't just go back to our room after the, even after my shift was done, you're supposed to be around. But we had the option to, go try water skiing if you wanted to try that, or go snorkeling or do whatever, which I found was just crazy because it was nothing that I'd ever done before.
So did you learn any skill? Yeah, I was going to ask you about sport. So did you learn any skill or any sport that you've never tried besides water skiing?
I did water skiing. So which went horribly in the beginning, but I eventually got the hang of it. I tried wakeboarding, but that didn't go well at all. And I'm pretty sure, I went, I never tried scuba diving with my buddy, even though, he was a scuba instructor and tried to get me to go out there all the time. I figured the fish don't come up here and mess with me. I'm not going to go down there and mess with them. We have kind of our
good call.
Yeah. So that was my, my thoughts on that.
Did you have any tricks to fight off the 15? I mean, even when you started, you must have got really tired. So did you have any did you try and sneak in naps, which you probably never did before? Or did you have some other trick for fighting off fatigue?
Not really. I mean, no? I think I was just running on adrenaline because, there was just so much that was so new there, on so many levels. So I don't even remember really being tired. I think I was just going all the time. And, for me, just the fact that, there was a nightclub that I could go to every single night and dance like the entire night and then, do it again the next day was like, that was kind of heaven to me. The only thing that I really like couldn't wrap my head around in the beginning was Crazy Science. Cause
I was going to bring that up. I was going to ask you what you didn't like.
Yeah.
It's like your first 2 weeks there, what you didn't like. And most people say that. So I was just curious if you.
Yeah. So for anyone that doesn't know what Crazy Signs are, they're basically, line dances that are, it's a tradition at Club Med.
Well, some of them I'd argue I wouldn't even call line dance. Like you're imitating animals up there. You're making basically stuff, you're looking like a fool. And
group dance is a better word.
Yeah. So, okay. Yeah.
so everyone knows these dances because all of the employees know them because, they've been doing them for a while. But the thing that's amazing is that the guests were so indoctrinated that all these guests know all of these dances. And some of these guests are, people that come back, year after year or even multiple times per year. And so, there's always new dances added, but, the old ones always stay. So before the show, Charlie says to me, one of my first nights there, if it was my first night there, he says, all right, yeah, so we have to go do Crazy Science. And I'm like, all right, what are Crazy Science? He said, oh, it's these dances. You're going to love it. It's amazing. You like to dance. I was like, yeah, I like to dance. All right, let's go. And then, when they get up there and it's, it's effectively, kind of like the electric slide,
Yeah, but, or you're dancing to the Village People, right?
Yeah. Oh yeah. YMCA or that kind of thing. And so I'm like, I can't believe this is really happening. And everyone else is doing like, I'm looking around, like these people have lost their minds. Every single person here like rushed this massive dance floor, quote unquote. And like, I'm saying hundreds of people were doing this and, the staff is in the front and everyone's following them and they're just having like a blast. And I'm like, I can't even really bring myself to do this. And so after the Crazy Signs are over, then like everyone would go into the theater for the show. And then I catch back up to Charlie and I'm like, dude, you guys do that every single night? And he was like, well, yeah, dude, but actually we do it twice at this, we do it once before the show and then we do it for like 2 hours after the show. I was like, you gotta be kidding me.
I mean, you didn't have to do it at the pool game? Man, you got off easy.
Well, no, there were, but he didn't even want to broach that with me.
Oh, okay. Yeah. You know what I mean? Oh yeah. He was easing you in. Okay.
Yeah. Just the fact that we had to do it twice in the evening for me, I was like, dude, you gotta be kidding me. This is, I can't imagine that this is a thing. So yeah, that kind of threw me off in the beginning.
Okay. Other than Charlie, who was the first GO you encountered? Was it at the airport? Like, was it the traffic GO? Like, other than Charlie, do you remember meeting like your first?
I honestly don't.
No? Okay.
No, because I mean, I think.
Was he at the airport to greet you?
No? Yeah, I'm pretty sure Charlie came. He came to the airport to get me.
Yeah, I was just curious if it was a reception GO or if you remember that.
No, I'm pretty sure Charlie came to get me and I hadn't seen him and it had been a while since I had seen him. So.
Okay. All right. So you're doing Village Village. And if you're like me, you're probably noticing what other people were doing. So how long did it take you to realize, I don't want to do this, I want to do that? And did anything, or did you just take the first thing that came at you with a contract? Or
That was kind of like my first thing. So yeah, so Village Village, my first, that's how I got in. And then obviously when I saw that the Land Sports Geo basically could just play volleyball all day, I was like, all right, yeah, that's where I need to be. And so
but I do remember this part, but you did something before that, right?
Oh absolutely.
Don't forget that part. Okay.
But what I wanted to do was land sports.
yes so. We all did, yes.
So
but it's a long circuitous route to land sports.
Absolutely.
And sometimes you have to take something you might have never done before, so if you can tell them please what you did next.
so I guess to get to that point, when I first got there, I had one chief of village that was a great guy, Italian guy. I think he just found me in an anomaly because, I was this guy from the States that didn't speak any other languages, but seemed to get along with mostly everyone there. I'd be in the nightclub all night, and that was kind of his thing. You know, he wanted the geos to be out and about, and I was, so he dug me. And I guess he kind of talked me up to the incoming.
If you like him, you can say his name if you want. or if you don't want to, that's okay.
No. I'm trying to think. It was Paoletti, right?
Yeah, Rico.
Rico Paoletti his name. So fantastic dude. Dug him a lot. And so when the chief of village switched over, different guy came in. I think Rico kind of talked me up and was like, "Yeah, this guy's great. You should probably keep him on. He's great for the club. The guests seem to love him. He does all the crazy signs." And at this time, now I'm loving the crazy signs,
Really?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I'm saying we're jumping forward a couple of months.
Oh, okay.
So new chief of village comes in and he was like, "Listen, I know you've been here for some months as an au pair. You're not getting paid. So I'm figuring you want, a job. Rico said that you wanted to be in land sports." And I was like, "Yeah, dude, volleyball is my thing. I love it." And he was like, "Yeah, that's great." He's like, "Yeah, he's like, I love volleyball too, but I got a land sports guy." And he said, "So do you have any artistic ability whatsoever?" And I was like, "Well, yeah, I can draw a little bit, I can sketch or, do some stuff." And he's like, "Oh, great. You're our new set designer."
Sorry. Okay.
And so I said, "Okay, what?" And so he said, "Yeah, you're going to make the sets. Don't worry about it. Our choreographer, he runs the entertainment. He knows exactly what he wants. So basically he'll tell you what to do. All you got to do is what he says." I said, "All right." So that was basically my first contract, was me being, a set designer in Cancun.
My God. Okay. Sorry. Yeah. For those listening, because I only know Joker as Mr. Landsport, so it's hard to fathom him doing especially that job, because I never would have guessed in a million years. But I mean, yes, you are artistic. It's just that, did you know at the time that was a big deal taking it? Because that's a big deal in a village.
I guess there was no set designer when this new chief of village came in. The choreographer / chief of entertainment was basically doing the sets with the rest of the entertainment team. I figured they're doing fine without me so far, so if I come in, it's just gonna be me helping out. I didn't think it was gonna be
clamps on everything. Yeah, okay.
I was like, yeah, I'll be fine. I'll
on some podiums. Yeah, okay.
Yeah, so that's it. So I was doing set design, painting stuff, basically, and he kind of just, it was exactly as that chief of village told me. He pointed at something and told me what to do, and that's what I was doing. So that was kind of like how that went. And I still spent most of my time playing volleyball, probably a little bit too much time playing volleyball, more than anything else I was doing at that time.
Okay, so let me just ask you something, just to table that just for a sec. So did you come to the resort with your nickname already? Because I know you had a childhood nickname. Or did you, when you saw everyone else, and Club Med had a nickname, at what point did you start putting Joker on your badge, I guess is what I'm asking.
So I didn't have Joker on my badge until my second season.
Oh, okay. All right.
Yes. No problem. As everyone in my first season was concerned, I was James. I think Charlie might've called me Joker, but I never actually got the name on my badge, I don't think,
okay,
in my first season.
And in these weekly meetings that you would have, the staff meetings, seeing as how Cancun was a pretty big singles village, were you ever warned or cautioned in a nice way not to form a relationship with a fellow employee? Or did it never come up?
It never came up as like in a meeting. I think it was maybe brought up by other geos that like, listen, you know,
okay,
you're probably better off not to, you know, be in a relationship with any other geos because, you know, like, things tend to turn bad when they don't work out. So I mean, it's kind of that kind of thing, but it was never said to me by anyone in any position of authority. It was more just kind of a,
okay, like an unspoken thing.
Yeah.
So when you arrived, I guess after a couple of months, so, or even in the first week, so did you experience any kind of culture shock? So, cause I guess you're with a lot of Europeans. So was there anything where, I gave you the example of like me getting kissed on New Year's Eve by a ton of guys, you know, I was like, huh. So did you have your own version of that?
Well, yeah. I mean, you know, there was just so much. I think that one, being in a new country that I had never been, two, like not understanding probably 75% of what was being spoken around me, because, you know, most of the people at reception were all speaking multiple languages at any particular time, English being one of them. You know, there was a lot of people from Europe, Spanish speakers, French speakers, Germans. And so that was one part. Then women being on the beach topless was like, just, you know, I couldn't even get my head around that. And then at the time, you know, Cancun was a singles village and it was pretty liberal with the amount of, you know, just rampant fornication going on all over the place.
Okay, we're going to swing just a sec from there. So actually you kind of lucked out. So being au pair and now being the set designer, you probably didn't have to do any shows because you're designer.
I didn't do any shows. They had a couple of like the after shows that, you know, they kind of looped me into.
Okay, well, do you recall a show, setting up for a show that was like a nightmarish, diabolical setup that you hated? Were they just standard shows? Like,
they were all diabolical because... They were all like nightmarish because this choreographer... I mean, I guess it was kind of like a double-edged sword because he knew exactly what he wanted, but what he wanted was always, you know...
Impossible?
Just super intricate and... you know, all kinds of like things being drilled into the stage. And, you know, it was always a nightmare, you know, things that are moving, you know, I feel like he thought that he should have had like, you know, like an $8,000 budget for each show that he did, you know what I mean? And it was a situation.
Okay. Because of your outgoing personality, you're good looking. Did, when you arrived, did any fellow employees take an instant dislike to you, even though they had never met you? They just put you in a category. I don't like this guy.
Not to my knowledge. You know, I think Charlie had a decent reputation there, and everyone knew that I was Charlie's buddy. I think that kind of, I think that gave me, you know, a little bit of leeway with the geos that were already there. And then I was, you know, I was kind of like the starry eyed new kid. You know what I mean? I was just having fun. I didn't really bother anybody. I didn't step on anybody's toes. I wasn't there trying to, you know, hook up with a bunch of people. So like, you know, I wasn't, you know, stealing girls from any other geos or anything like that. At least I didn't sense it. it's completely possible that people didn't like me and I didn't know, but I didn't feel that way anyways.
So other than your lack of passion for crazy signs, I assume the things you liked far outnumbered the things you didn't like about that job. First season. So,
I mean, the same thing as, the thing about Cancun is that, you know, if you leave the village, you're in Cancun. So,
yep.
You know, we went out often. And so before I actually got my contract, one of the other guys that was an au pair with me, his name was Oscar. And everyone knew Oscar because, I mean, he had been an au pair. I don't know how many times. I guess he did it all the time. So his thing was that he used to go into Cancun and do hard body contests. So he convinced me to come out and start doing these hard body contests with them because we weren't getting paid as au pairs, but if we won the hard body contest, you know, you're making $500-$600 in a night. So
replace bottle tequila, if I recall, when you forced me to do it on the...
Yeah. Well, that's the thing. You can get money. You get bottles of, you know, Bacardi tequila. You know, you get the free bungee jumps. You know, gift certificates to all kinds of places, and that's, you know,
they had bungee jumping back then.
Excuse me?
They had bungee jumping in 97 in Cancun?
Oh, yeah, dude. That was the first time I went bungee jumping.
Where was it? Was it one of the hotel bars or?
No, dude. It was like this random crane in Cancun.
Oh, really?
Oh, like yeah, dude.
Downtown Cancun.
So sketchy. So sketchy, dude. So, yeah, that was the first time I bungee jumped was
in Cancun.
Because I won it for free. And I guess winning it for free probably should have put me off of it in and of itself.
So how bad were your eyeballs and your ankles hurting after you did it?
It actually wasn't that bad. I was terrified, but I went ahead and did it.
Oh, you didn't. Your eyeballs didn't hurt, and my eyeballs hurt.
Not that I remember. I mean,
bungee. It was really like Wile E. Coyote when you that's what I felt. They were coming out of my eye sockets.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I honestly don't remember. It was so long ago, man. But yeah, so that's the thing. So we that was how I was making money before I had a contract, because there was, depending on what club you were dancing at, some of the winners were judged by crowd noise. And so we'd basically rig it. We'd bring a bunch of guests and a bunch of geos from the club and just have them come and scream for us, even if we weren't the best looking guys up there, the most buff looking guys, best dancers, whatever. But we completely rigged some of these votes so that we could win by the end of the night.
Did you bust out your patented backflip during one of these shows?
Oh, yeah, dude. There was one time that I did like a whole tumbling thing and fell off the stage, man.
Are you sure?
Oh, yeah. In a G-string. It was wasn't a good look at all.
Sticks the landing.
Yeah, dude. I ended up on someone's table off the stage.
So during this time, did you meet any celebrities or people that were famous, but you had no idea who they were? Because it's quite funny when you meet someone like who's well known in Europe, but you've never heard of them, and everyone else is freaking out over them. So in that first season, did you meet any actors?
I know there was a really famous person that came from a really famous woman that came from Quebec, and to this day I don't remember who it was.
Okay.
I just remember that everyone else was
freaking out.
I was tripping over themselves to get in contact with her. But yeah, I have no idea who it was. I just know that everyone wanted, you know, a little FaceTime with her to see her and whatnot. And I think Dominique Wilkins came.
Okay.
While I was there, but
NBA superstar.
Yeah. Yeah. So, but those were the two of my first season.
Do you have like one story that stands out? Like I'm looking for a clean story, like a memorable story that happened to you or that you were a part of. Do you have anything like that like you're never going to believe this story, but a clean one?
Clean. Okay.
Yeah, sorry. I'm kind of hamstringing you here on that, but sorry.
Looking
for something weird or funny, or to be honest, you backflipping off the stage in a G-string, that's a pretty good story. So I don't know if you're able to top that one.
Wasn't a good look though. Okay, well, all right. Well, okay. So here's one. This is kind of interesting. There was when, you know, same kind of situation, because I was doing these hard body contests and literally would be there, you know, out in Cancun multiple times a week, because you could literally find one of those contests every single night if you wanted to. And there were some guys in Cancun that lived off just doing that. So these guys would work out during the day and go do these contests at night. But so, you know, you could have followings. And so there was actually, I remember there was this, this German young woman that would like, you know, kind of hail me down every time, you know, at one of these clubs. And I mean, really, really pretty girl, you know, spoke really good English, considering I couldn't speak anything else. So, you know, we'd come across each other on multiple occasions and, you know, kind of, you know, kissed in the nightclub or whatever like that. And so eventually one night multiple nights she'd asked me to come back to her place. And so I was like, well, you know, where's your place? She's like, oh, I have a place in Cancun. So I kind of, you know, decided not to do that because I didn't know the place. I didn't want to go by myself. I didn't know if I was getting set up, you know, to get kidnapped and murdered or something. So I had always said no. And then eventually one night I was just like, all right, let's go. So we went back to her apartment. So she had this like little apartment in Cancun. Couldn't tell you for the life of me where it was. So, and this is after, you know, a night of complete drinking and debauchery with all the other geos. Then I disappear and I go to this young lady's apartment. So we're there and I'm keeping it clean.
Okay, thank you.
So we're there, you know, we're hanging out, we have a good night, whatever like that, and we both crash at her place. So, you know, obviously I was supposed to work the next morning, and so I wake up completely hungover. She might not have even been there when I got up. And so I'm looking around. I don't have any idea where in Cancun I am. So I get myself dressed, get out of this apartment, and I'm in this kind of like residential area, but it's all gated it's all gated up. Like there's no way for me to get out. I can't find a door to get out of this place. I'm out of the apartment. Yeah, I'm out of the apartment, but I can't get out of this little area, like the complex or whatever. So exactly. So I'm scaling this like steel fence, dude, trying to get out so that I can get back to the club. And it's super early. It's gotta be like, 6 o'clock in the morning, 7 o'clock in the morning. So I'm looking around this so that I'm not like trying to draw attention to myself, but at the same time trying to scale this steel.
Well, yeah, I guess the gates are for prevent people from breaking in, but you're trying to get out.
I'm trying to get out. Exactly. And I don't know, for whatever reason, I couldn't find a gate. I couldn't find a door handle. I couldn't find, I don't know, maybe there was a door and there was no key. I don't know, dude. But in any event, I was trapped in this place. And so I end up scaling this fence, hopping over, of course, caught like my jeans, my t-shirt on whatever kind of Berlin's. Top of this thing was. It wasn't like razor wire, but it wasn't, it was pointy and basically tore all my clothes trying to come down the other side. So now I've got like completely shredded clothes in this weird residential community in Cancun. I'm trying to hail down a taxi so that I can get back to Club Med. So that took
nothing fishy about that at all.
No. Oh, dude, so creepy. Okay. So absolutely creepy, dude. So eventually I do. I get a cab and I get back to the club, but now I get back to the club and it's, it's probably 8 o'clock in the morning and there's people at reception. So now I'm hopping out of the club. And my first season, I wasn't actually in the in Casitas where all the Geos lived at that point. I was actually, my room was in the village, in the main village. I had a room like a guest. And so I literally needed to go, get dropped off at reception and walk through the village in order to get back to my room. So I hop out of the cab, pay the guy. And so me with these tattered clothes, smelling like yesterday's tequila, I'm walking through the village. And that's the first time I had ever heard the phrase walk of shame. And so everyone at reception, and bear in mind, the people at reception are the people that I worked with from day to day, because I worked at reception as a welcome Geo village. And so they were all just in stitches watching me trying to get back to my room, in what was left of my clothes from the night before.
Well, yeah, that definitely wasn't a walk of fame. I'll say that because of the tattered clothing. Yeah, that one will go under walk of shame. Bad. The only thing that would make this story just perfect would be as you were climbing over that high fence, someone opened it and you realized that that was the door that you were on. That would have made it perfect. But I still like how it ended, though.
it was bad. It was a bad situation.
Were there any, besides Rico, were there any other managers or GOs that like stood out to you, like made an impression on you? Like, oh, wow, yeah. that guy's like, wow.
Well, yeah. Well, at the time, Eduardo Rojas was the annex restaurant manager at the time. And he was another guy that would go out and do the hard body contest. And so he was a buddy, great guy, had all kinds of connections, knew the guys that owned the clubs at the, in Cancun. So I used to hang out with him quite a bit. And he went on to become a chief of village, if my memory serves.
Well, was there anyone on the sports team that stood out to you?
On the sports team at the time, I'm trying to think who, I honestly, I can't even remember who was on the sports team back then. Oh, there was, there was on the entertainment team when I first got there, there was Mario, Mr. Big. Do you know Mr. Big?
Yeah, I know who he is, yeah.
Yeah, so he's a Quebecois guy. So he was the entertainer and just, for me, the funniest dude ever, just because, when you first get to Club Med, it's these skits that everyone has seen 1,000 times, except for the people that have never been there before. And when it's new to you, everything this guy did was hilarious, but, skits and jokes and whatnot that had been done for, 10 years. But, when you see him for the first time, he was just the funniest man on earth to me. So he went by the name Mr. Big, good guy. And I'm trying to think who else was there. There was another dude from Quebec named Mario that was the chief of sports, I believe. I can't remember his last name.
Yeah, no, I know who you're referring to. Yeah, no, I know who you're referring to.
Yeah. Okay, yeah. So he was chief of sports, good guy as well.
Okay, so your first season comes to an end. So did you say to yourself, I can't do this forever. I got to go home and get a serious job, or did you immediately sign up for a second season?
So well, how it was kind of, my season didn't end like a traditional season would end, where you know the season's up and then you kind of move to your next place. I kind of switched like right after New Year's because
switched.
Yeah,
you mean your outlook or work habits?
Clubs.
Clubs?
Yeah, I switched. Yeah, I switched villages.
You did?
Yeah.
You mean you went from Cancun to another one like in the span of 5 months, 6 months?
Yeah. So
okay.
So
how did that happen?
Like, right after New Year's, I'd done a New Year's show, ended up like hurting myself, and
oh, okay, I had to go home to.
Well, no, you would think, but that's not really what happened. So I kind of, I like was doing the show, ended up hurting myself, and I went to sleep. I crashed out and didn't help take anything down from the New Year's show.
Oh, okay. I think I see where this is going. Okay.
Exactly.
So,
because I was injured. So the chief of entertainment wasn't happy about that. I guess overall wasn't enamored with my work ethic as a set designer. So he wanted me gone. But the chief of village, he dug me a lot. And so he was like, listen, you know, he's like, I don't have anywhere else to put you here, but I got a buddy of mine is working, is the chief of village in Huatulco. Would you want to go out there? And I was like, all right. And so they booked me, they booked me my flight, and I went out to Huatulco, and then started out there January.
Cancun to Huatulco. So what did you do in Huatulco?
Huatulco, I got there and I became archery instructor.
Oh God. Okay. Well, that's we'll have to save that one for another podcast. Okay. Oh man. Woo. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. I got that. Wow. So would you say, okay, so was there something magical compared to all the seasons you did? Was there something magical about that season because it was the first one?
Or, oh, yeah, I mean, I think.
Or is there another one that no? There's much more than that. Many more than that that are more magical. Or was it? Do you really consider it a special time, that first season?
Well, I mean, I think for sure it was. You know, that was. It was unique. It was, you know, my first experience with it. You know, it was like I said, new country, first time in a different country, first time being exposed to all these different cultures and I mean everything. So I mean that's it's priceless. You know, what I mean that first experience that I had. But like I said, everyone that asked me, because I, you know, you end up living in a whole bunch of different countries and whatnot, and people ask, you know, which one was your favorite or which one was the best, and my answer is kind of standard. I mean, it's kind of cheesy, but I think every single village that I worked with or worked in, every country that I spent time in, there's special things about each and every one of them. And I just, you know, it's really hard to say that one was my favorite, or you know, because I think there's always high points in each place, and there's like a unique quality to every country and every village that you're in, every team that you work with and whatnot. So
okay, without going into detail, you'll know what I mean. Are you glad or sad that we didn't have all this social media when we were in Club Med?
No, I think, I mean, it's, you know, when I started, I guess, not even social media, the fact is, you know, not everyone even had cell phones at that point. So if you wanted to make a call back home, you literally had to go to the phone area and place a call. You know, there was no phones even in every single hotel room at that time. So, I mean, I think I really appreciate the, you know, just, I guess that removal of that kind of distraction, at that time, you know, so you weren't thinking about making calls out or watching TV, because I mean, almost no one had a TV in their room either. You know, it was really just music and then hanging out with people. And I think it definitely wouldn't be the same if, you know, under the circumstances that we are now, where, you know, everyone's basically glued to their phone and looking at their Instagram and taking photos of their food and all that kind of thing. It kind of would take you out of the moment that you were in at that time, you know. Yeah. Everything was kind of here and now. You're doing it, you're living it and enjoying it. And I think some of that would have been lost if we had that social media aspect too.
Most definitely. Yeah, I agree. Well, I can't thank you enough, Joker, for doing this first show with me.
Oh, it's my pleasure. It's my pleasure, Swan.
I learned a lot. Okay.
Oh, no, it's great.
And really thank you. So, ladies and gentlemen, that was my first season with James Cradle Jr., a.k.a. Joker. And anything you want to say before you leave?
Just appreciate you having me on. And if it hadn't been for Club Med, I would not have you as one of my best friends in the world. And that in and of itself makes any experience, that whole experience, worth it.
Yeah, that's true. I still remember the exact day I met you on a dock in Australia. I'm from Montreal, you're from Boston, and we met on a dock in Australia in Lindeman Island, and I still remember the exact day. So that's, you know, someone special when you can remember something 21 years ago, you know.
Absolutely.
All right, sir. Well, thank you again very much. And so, ladies and gentlemen, thank you for listening to the first podcast of my first season. We'll see y'all later. Bye.